And then the reception of the people in my group was so moving that it was an obvious confirmation that the deeper you dig, the more connective the writing becomes. But it's hard.
Hey, friend, it's David Nibinski here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we hope you take ownership of your portfolio career and design a life that you want to live. Today's conversation is with Lauren Ducray. Lauren hosts an amazing creativity and poetry events in New York City. I've really enjoyed learning at the events and also making friends at them. And so it was just such a great opportunity and treat to get together here to talk with her. This is a podcast mixer episode where it's recorded live in front of an audience. In this episode, you'll learn about Lauren's aha moments with poetry, how she started writing poetry, how she wants to make poetry accessible, how to think about an audience for your poetry, and so much more. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter, which is a Substack called Portfolio Career. You can also take my free podcasting course as well. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Lauren.
So poetry.
Yes. That is why we're here.
Yeah. Okay. I'm curious how you kind of got started, and I'm thinking maybe a breakup happened. Is that?
Where do you get your intel? That is correct. Although I'd start the story a little bit before.
Okay.
I didn't start my relationship with poetry in the most inspiring way, to be honest. So I grew up in France, and poetry has a big part in French culture. But what I remember was in school, in primary school, we have poetry class, and it was a lot about memorizing poems by heart and reciting them in front of the class, which absolutely terrified me. So that was the first kind of significant memory around poetry. And then after that, I majored in literature in high school and in university, so a lot of love for language as an art form. But most of that was studying the works of other people, staying in that analytical approach to language rather than the creative. And fun fact, in French university, there is no such thing as creative writing classes. So I very much grew up with the belief that you're either born a creative or you're not. It's very, I'm like,
and many of us,
you know, we're in New York when people are like, what? How dare they? So to me, poetry was very mysterious, quite unapproachable. The type of literature that moved me the most was the novel. It just felt more kind of democratic, more approachable, more linear. You had a narrative arc that takes you from A to Z with character development. And yeah, poets felt like this pantheon of people touched by, you know, the gods, which didn't feel like me. And that all changed through life. And I think that is how poetry weasels its way in. It's not necessarily through like books and classes and academia, but truly through the vulnerable moments of life. And that for me was a breakup in my mid-20s with a person I thought I was possibly going to spend the rest of my life with. And I found myself faced with, you know, the small questions of like, who am I? And I'd spent so much time writing in different capacities, more academic writing, journalism, things like that, that I picked up my pen and I started journaling every morning, just stream of consciousness. And for those of you who know the artist's way, that is one of the recommended practices. So I was doing that. And I found myself towards the end of these writing sessions starting to play with language like music. Words almost like notes or phrases of music, the rhythm. And there was something really childlike and playful that was in complete contrast with the kind of structured, very strict approach that I had had to poetry in my education. And that was the aha moment for me.
And then after that aha moment, what'd you do?
Great question. That was it. And now I'm here. So I started kind of taking those pieces out of my journaling bits and reworking them as poems and really realizing like, wow, I think this is poetry because this feels non-linear, non-analytical. Being in New York at that time, so no longer in France, I started looking up writing workshops, was mind blown by the fact that you can be a poet slash about a million other things and you don't have to be like a bookworm or just locked up in your study, you know, scribbling away day in, day out. So that was the first really liberating insight for me. And long story short, considered doing a creative writing MFA, but didn't want to turn it into like homework. So I decided to go the workshop way. There's Brooklyn poets that are absolutely fantastic that I did. And kind of carve out my own path, which led to self-publishing my first book and coming out with an album of poetry and music as well, and discovering that one of my favorite ways to do poetry is in conversation with other art forms. Again, because as I wrote and read way more poetry, I was just baffled by how much more approachable it was. And I was like, people need to know this. And I think especially because of all the ways that I discovered that it could support my well-being. And I think the well-being of most of us.
And what are the ways that you think it does support people's or can support people's well-being?
So I think the first way is that musicality, which was the first hint I had that what I was writing was poetry. And I think we've all related to music in ways where it's shifted our moods, helped us attain insight, self-soothe, all these beautiful things that music can help us attain. And I nerded out on this a little bit, and it turns out that there are small-scale studies that suggest that the parts of your brain that light up to music are the same that light up when you listen to poetry. And in one of those studies, they asked the people who had just listened to both, you know, poetry and non-poetry, and they'd seen that their brain reacted to the poetry. They asked these participants to then read what they had heard and, you know, identify which was poetry, which wasn't. And they couldn't necessarily do that, which is to say that you don't need to be able to analytically, intellectually recognize poetry for it to move you, for your brain to literally react to it. So your body understands poetry as instinctively as it does music. That was a first big insight for me. And then the second one is that poetry can be a mindfulness practice. And there's a lot of research that shows that a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. And the opposite of a wandering mind is a mindful mind, one that's present with your thoughts, your emotions, your body sensations at any given moment. And I started to realize that poems do that because of their form. So when you think of a poem in comparison to a novel, an essay, a play, other forms of written art, poems are usually rather short, and they usually also use line breaks. So there's literal space on the page for your eye to come into focus, to relax, and to slow down. And as you do that, you kind of have to notice every single detail in the poem. And again, I think of the way that I'll read novels. Sometimes I will skip over entire paragraphs just because I want to get to like the next juicy part. You can't really do that with a poem, or you're reading something completely different. Every piece of punctuation counts, every line break counts, and that attention to detail and that slowness is a mindfulness practice in itself. And then there's a third piece, which I'm still unwrapping and keeps on blowing my mind, is that I think that poems are portals to empathy and belonging. And there's a lot of research as well that shows the very real effects of loneliness and isolation on our mental and physical well-being, as the pandemic highlighted, you know, really drastically. And the way that poems do this, and this is the magic, but it's not magic because you can explain it, is that they use this very familiar thing that is language, that it's also quite logical, right? It helps us organize the world. So it uses this familiar logical thing to elicit, evoke, bring to the fore these non-logical things that we live with, which are our emotions, our imagination, and our intuition. And so in doing that, poems become these mirrors for us to see all those things. So you might be reading a poem and you get really frustrated because you're like, what the hell does this mean? But you can go back to the poem and be like, where's this confusion coming from? And why does it upset me this much? Or you might be completely transported by one metaphor. And again, you can go back to language, which is the thing that we all use in one form or another, and be like, what was it about those three words in a line that just made me travel to another point in time and in space? And I think that when that happens, that connecting of the non-logical and the logical, not only do we become more self-aware, which is just an amazing tool to navigate life more easily, it also allows us to gain the sense of belonging. And I'll give you an example. A few years ago, I was walking home in Brooklyn, and I'm smiling because David knows this story. I was walking home in Brooklyn. There's no one in the street with me, and I'm listening to the TED Talk by poet and philosopher David White, who I highly recommend. And in this TED Talk, he shares a piece called Santiago about the pilgrimage through France and Spain. And it's all about this transformative journey, and I'm vibing with it. I am with his words. He's an amazing speaker. And he says these words: "You were more marvelous in your simple wish to find a way than any of the gilded roofs you could find upon your destination." And that just floored me. I remember stopping in my tracks, starting to cry and laugh at the same time, which I call crafting. And I think what happened in that moment is that the order and the choice of words that David White put on the page or on stage in this instant cut through all these layers and spoke to a part of me that really needed to hear that that simple wish to find a way was enough. And I maybe didn't even realize that that part of me needed to be recognized and heard, but I felt completely seen, understood, and connected to David White, to honestly kind of just the whole world within an instant, even though I was completely alone. I didn't feel lonely at all. And I think that poems can be these really powerful reminders that we belong and that we're not alone, even if you are literally physically at home just reading these printed words on a page. And that just feels like something I'm like, people need to know this.
I'm curious, like, people here, have you guys had that kind of aha moment with a piece of poetry? Like, would you call it crafting? Is that what it's called?
Crafting.
Crafting. Has anyone had expression. A crafting moment before or anything like that? Or is it maybe like a show of hands? Like, hell yeah, I've had that moment with, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. Crafting. And it seems like what you're also talking about there is like, you can write the poetry, then also reading it. And it's not just one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think people might go to writing immediately when we talk about poetry, but there's growing research on the benefits of just reading it and being in that connection through the words of others. And I think the power in that is that there's this idea that the more personal the poem, the more universal the message. And what you're getting is like somebody else's deeply personal, vulnerable experience is resonating with that deep part in you. And so I actually think that reading it can be more of a conversation than writing with yourself. Although I think that when you're writing, you're kind of in conversation with yourself. But that connective power really comes in that there is a piece in front of you by someone else, but it becomes yours. Yeah.
Wait, can you say that part? The more personal, the more universal?
Yeah, the more personal the piece, the more universal the message. Which is a writing tip I was reminded of recently.
Yeah.
And that's the...
Did you apply it or what?
I did.
Tell us more.
I did. It was a really challenging experience, and I realized in that moment I was on a writing retreat and I had written the first poem that I was quite pleased with. It felt quite abstract and I think it was quite beautiful in ways. And then with my group, we started getting into deeper and deeper conversations about our life and our experience of the world. And somebody said that. And so for the second poem, I was kind of going to take the same approach of abstraction, which can be personal in its own way. But I was like, no, you're going to write about this thing you've never been able to write about yet, which was what is now in a poem I call the year of triple heartbreak, which were three forms of heartbreak that I experienced in 2020 over COVID and that were very transformative, but they were in that space beyond words. And I was like, let's find a way to write about this. And it was such an unexpected poem to write. And then the reception of the people in my group was so moving that it was an obvious confirmation that the deeper you dig, the more connective the writing becomes. But it's hard.
And so did it kind of heal those, the triple?
I think it made them less scary and somewhat gave them less control because they were brought to the surface and because they were turned into this more palpable thing that was this poem that has language that was not trying to silver line anything, I don't think. It was honest. And yet you have this thing that is, or that I have a lot of tenderness for, which is this poem. So I can have tenderness towards this experience that was painful thanks to the poem.
Does anybody have a question so far? If you do, just come up. Yeah. I'll hand you your mic. Was that your mouth moving?
Yeah, you do. Podcast, man.
Sorry. The inner 10-year-old in me, shout out IFS, I had a question. Sorry, Gary. I had a quick question. Just the little child in me was wondering, when you were learning, my experience with poetry is similar to what you described as when you grew up in France and learning by rote memory. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious, do you remember any of those poems and which one stood out to you now that as a practicing poet?
That is a really good and tough question. Do I remember
audience
any?
Audience always has better questions than me, so that's why, you know, we need your questions. Yeah.
Do I remember any by heart? No, they're all in French, so that's my cop out. So there's this one poet who's called Jean de La Fontaine, who writes these like parables, and he wrote during the monarchy in France, and all the characters are animals. And they're just embedded in French culture where like everybody learns these poems. And there's these kind of like archetypes of like the fox and the crow. And there is one about a crow who is high up in his tree. And I think it's a fox who comes along and the crow has cheese in its beak. And for some reason, apparently foxes want cheese. It made sense somehow. It's a parable. And the fox compliments the crow to the point that the crow starts singing and drops the cheese. And so the lesson was there's always a moral to these poems, and the moral of the story is, you know, don't let flattery get the better of you. So it was a lot, you're making me realize that a lot of those poems had that moral bent to them. So that was also a kind of paradigm that I had for poetry. That there has to be a lesson. Dorian?
The album also is in French, by the way, yes. That Lauren talked about. So we'll put that in the show notes. So how, like, you talked about the more personal the message or the more universal. How have you been, like, what do you think it means that we can have this kind of relationship to poetry and like a, such a unique, that everyone has like their own relationship to it. And it's like personal, but it's not. Like, what do you think that means?
So what's coming to mind is this quote by David White as well. It's becoming his podcast. And he said that poetry is language against which you have no defenses. And I think that ties back to the musicality of it and to how poetry, I think, uses all of the aspects of language, right? Like all of the senses. It really takes everything that there is there and gives it to you or throws it to you. And because it's using all these senses and speaking to imagination, intuition, emotion, that's why it has that ability to cut through the analytical thinking mind, because it's talking to you beyond that single kind of like, if you think of it as like colors, the analytical mind might be like one color, right? But poetry is shining the whole spectrum of colors at you. So it has that ability to connect, I think, more universally than the more transactional forms of language that we use in everyday life.
Yeah. And it seems like, I think we've talked about it a little bit before, is that like your poetry creation part has been a way to like overcome perfectionism? Or
yes,
how would you, I don't know, are people, do people here feel like they're perfectionists? I don't know, raise of hands.
I'm seeing nods, emphatic nods.
So I think like, was it like 2019 or something like that? You're sharing a post a week or something like that on social media. As a way to just share and see. So talk to us about how maybe perfectionism and poetry has kind of come up in your world.
Yeah, it always makes me smile because I feel like there's nothing more perfectionist than choosing poetry as a way to get over perfectionism. but I think it makes sense ultimately. But yes, when I got more, not comfortable writing poetry, I think when just when I started writing more of it, I gave myself the challenge to share one poem a week on social media, a screenshot of my notes, really trying not to edit it too much, as a kind of exposure to how it feels to put something out there that is not perfect. And I think I chose poetry because it seems like there are less clear standards for judgment of it. It's both, people judge it a lot, but at the same time, what is a perfect poem? And so it felt like a place where I could use language, which again, just is the stuff that I am drawn to, in a way where people couldn't judge me as harshly. And at the end of the day, if I write a poem at home and it's just for myself, maybe it's perfect for that moment because I put the words on the paper that I needed to put on the paper. And if somebody doesn't like it, I don't really care. It's easier not to care in that way. So I think poetry felt like one of the most liberated spaces to play with language.
Okay. And then a little bit after that, or talk to us about a New Year's resolution, New Year's Eve resolution.
Yeah, in 2020, the infamous year, I decided I was going to write a book.
Woo woo!
Thank you. I think at the time it felt quite a bit of the perfectionist being like, okay, it's time, you must write a book. But there was also a deeper, I think, catharsis of wanting to have that vulnerability. And I think the poems that ended up in that book are, when I read them now, they feel quite tender and vulnerable and slightly different than what I write today. But it was a exposing of myself to the world. And again, in that attempt to prove to myself that I am worthy. And it was still in line with that desire to make poetry more approachable. So I decided to self-publish, to have full agency. I felt like I had spent a lot of my life living up to the standards of gatekeepers, you know, teachers, academic standards, job interviews, performance reviews, all these things that are ultimately out of our hands. And I wanted the book to just be mine to make and not have to go through the whole sending it to publishers and stuff, which in the process of self-publishing, massive respect for publishers because it's a lot of work. So I got humbled. But what I got to do was turn it into an art book as well. So again, bringing poetry into conversation with art pieces. So I collaborated with an amazing graphic designer, David Cochante, and then a dear artist friend, Erwan Il Debouchen. I was going to try and pronounce that with an American accent, which is just not the Frenchest name out there. And the way that I went about it, particularly with the artist, was I didn't want him to illustrate the poems. I invited him to draw or share whatever resonated with my pieces. So there were some of the pieces he was like, I got nothing. And I was like, great. I want this to be a conversation. I don't want this to just be like the visual representation of what I'm writing. And it was a super fun process. We took our time, which was another practice, a poetic practice that is important, is that poetry takes its own time. You know, reading a poem itself imposes its own rhythm, but writing it as well is completely nonlinear. There is no, if you sit down 3 hours, you'll get something good, but if you sit down 5 hours, it'll be better. That is not how it works. And it was the same with this book, where if one of us needed a break, we took it. And so I think giving ourselves that space was great. And then putting it out ourselves and having a little baby out in the world.
Without the gatekeepers.
Exactly.
Anybody else relate to that, of this whole gatekeepers and just publishing yourself. Hell yeah.
Cool. And getting over imposter syndrome, which I still kind of am doing, because there was still a part of my mind that thought if this hadn't been approved by gatekeepers, then I was cheating. And I think that's a disservice to the poems themselves. I think something I've learned in the process is I don't control the poems, right? I'm kind of the filter through which the poems come into the world, but then they have their own agency, their own autonomy, kind of. I don't have kids, but you have a child, you made that child 100%, but they are their own human, their own being. And that's kind of how I see artistic output in general. And so I think it's like if I were calling my child like, oh, like you kind of cheated because you came out this different way. And no, I'm like, this work deserves to be out there. And my job is to be a steward of it rather than take it personally or think that I'm less than. That makes it about me rather than shining a light on the work itself.
Avi, did you have a question?
Thank you so much. One thing that I've observed, both in my attempts to write, but also listening to poets perform at open mics and other venues, is when you're bringing, you know, very deeply personal things, including often very painful or traumatic experiences, it can be difficult to convey that in a way that lands to the audience in a way that is not just weight and something to be received that can be very difficult to receive. Yeah. So my question is, what advice do you have for poets or people trying to express themselves in this manner while sharing deeply personal things, doing so in a way that is very beneficial and like helpful to the audience?
That's a great question, which I feel is like a PhD in psychology on its own. Yeah, what's coming back is that idea of the poet being the steward of the words. And I'm going to take a little tangent in answering your question, but I had crazy stage fright for the longest time. And then when I started writing poetry and wanting to share it, that was complicated. And what really helped me was to remind myself, when you get up on stage behind the mic, it's not about you. Yes, again, you wrote those words. This came through your experience, but it's not about me and how I appear to people and will people like me and think I'm a good performer, you know, all these very ego-centered questions. It's about how can I best deliver these words? How can I be of service to the words themselves? And I wonder if that doesn't help mitigate potentially this notion. What I'm getting is a bit of like offloading of just throwing it onto the audience, where it's how can I make these words live like an actor, you know? And you want an actor to make you feel things, but I think there's an awareness and an agreement that there still is that fourth wall to an extent, and that you're here to experience that, but not to take it on and home with you. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I love that.
Okay.
I have two questions. I'll start with the first one. You mentioned something about your first book came out, and those poems were a little more tender, and it's different. How has your kind of style changed?
Thank you for asking that. I feel like it is, despite my saying that the more personal, the more universal, I'm gonna now contradict myself amazingly. I feel like I've stepped away a little bit of first-person poems. So there's a little less I and a little more contemplation. That might also be a factor that my poetry and my mindfulness practice really go hand in hand. And so I'll have pieces now that are truly just about other things. And the speaker in the poem is barely there in that first-person kind of way.
That is so interesting. My second question, very different. You mentioned you got a lot of respect for publishers, and publishing is very hard. Would you mind talking about the challenges that you went through publishing?
The challenges of self-publishing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. The creative process, super fun. And I was very lucky that I have a full-time job, which allowed me to finance working with a graphic designer who did a ton of work, right? But then there's the whole supply chain deal, because I also decided not to do print on demand, where people just order your book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, etc., and they send it out. I decided that I was going to buy like 200 books, have them shipped to my home so that I would ship them. There are choices to be made in this life, and I learned things. I did, that being said, obviously get the emails of folks who bought the book. So that was an advantage to start building a community around this. So that was an element. And then the whole kind of marketing and PR side of things, it's all on you. So I learned a lot on that front. Challenging, but you get a real taste of the start to finish experience that typically publishers, marketers, PR people deal with. And I found a lot of respect for all of those jobs.
Thank you. Thank you. I am toying with this idea of more personal, more universal. I'm curious, in your writing, do you have an audience in mind, which is like, is the audience yourself? Is the audience like someone else? And also, what do you wish to evoke with your writing?
Mm. Yeah, the audience question is a really good one. I think I always carry an intent to be approachable most of the time. Sometimes poems just want to come out the way they want to come out, and maybe those are the ones that I'll share in a different way than the ones I chose typically for this collection. So I'll be aware of, I can, of like using overly complicated words, which I tend to gravitate towards, editing by reading my work out loud and making sure that it flows to a certain extent. I think being aware of the musicality in that sense, for it to be understandable to an extent. And I think there's a pitfall of writing for an audience and then you lose yourself. It's kind of like this people-pleasing tendency. A teacher once told me that sometimes you have to get out of the way of the poem. And what he meant in that moment is that I had sat down with this idea of what I wanted to write. And then as I was writing, something else started emerging. And I was like, oh, I'll just fit these two things into the same poem. And as we shared in workshop, people were like, it feels like there are two poems in this poem. Hence him sharing, sometimes you have to get out of the way of the poem. And so I think that can help be somewhat of a North Star to feel when you're going towards, I'm writing just to be understood exclusively, you know, by people. And when maybe I'm going into ultra personal language, which again can be a choice. I think there's, if people write stuff that's super experimental, I'm like, that's great. And maybe not that many people will understand off the bat. And just being honest also with that kind of expectation of readership.
Answer
your
question.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, and what do you wish to evoke?
Oh, yeah. The harder one. I think it depends on the poem. Sometimes it'll be to share a really delightful or awe-inspiring moment that I had, and that feels very clear. And sometimes I truly don't know. There's also this notion, the French poet Jean Cocteau said, the poet doesn't create, he listens. And I experienced this rather recently when I tend to want to kind of control my written output and sit down again and know what I'm going to write. And I really practice being like, I don't know what I'm going to write. Mm-hmm. Instead of being like, fuck, I don't know what I'm going to write. It's like, I don't know. And this poem came out. And so there wasn't a clear intent of what I wanted to elicit. I kind of followed, I feel, the intent of the thread, which all sounds completely mystical. But that was the experience that I had in that moment, at least.
Is there anything else you want to share?
That might be the toughest question of all. I would just love for everyone to try and test out a few poets, a few poems, until you land on one that resonates, because there are going to be as many different forms of poetic language out there as there are humans, and so all might not resonate. But there is a poem out there for you. I can guarantee that, and I can't guarantee most things. And so encouraging people to find that like resonance in the same way that you would pluck the chord of an instrument and you're like, ooh, like that's the right note, you know?
Or the Taylor Swift song. When you listen to the Taylor Swift song, there's just like that.
It
with
hits
the poem.
The spot.
Yeah. For all the Swifties out there. Where can people stay in touch? Where can people learn more?
Yeah, so Instagram is a good place to follow me. It's Lauren Ducre. And my website as well, laurenducre.com. I do workshops around this idea of poetry and well-being. And my book is called Tongues Tied. And my album is on Spotify and Apple and anywhere you listen to your music. And it's called Cordes Sensibles, which means it's a play on when you say tirer la corde sensible is to like touch somebody's like sensitive spot. But it's with, I recorded it with a guitarist. So there's the idea of the corde is like a string. So it's like pulling your exact, I was like, there's a expression in English for this. Thank you.
Heartstrings? Is that
pulling your heartstrings. Yeah. Play with the guitar.
All right. Let's give it up for Lauren.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.